Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on X at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am so hopeful that I do this episode justice today because this is one of my favorite preps that I have done for an episode. I am so excited to talk through everything. So here is hoping that it goes exactly as I want it to. Today, we're going to be breaking down in great detail the Packers draft philosophy, what it is, how it works, what the Green Bay Packers are trying to accomplish, and how you can go about really studying for the draft at hopefully a different level than maybe you have in the past, and really understanding why Green Bay does things the way that they do. And also, again, a better appreciation for how to prepare for it and how to sort of react when we see Green Bay have a very specific type of draft class. So let's jump into it right away. What we're going to be discussing today is what the Packers draft philosophy is. What are relative athletic scores? We hear about RAS and relative athletic scores all the time. I want to go over that and specifically what it is and why it's important, not to the Packers, but to Packer fans, and why it is something to keep a very keen eye on. And I also want to go over how the Packers go about deciding what players they're going to draft. So we're going to go through all of that today, and I'm going to try to go through as much as I possibly can so that you guys can have the best understanding possible of exactly what this philosophy is. Now, in order to do so, we actually have to sort of start from the beginning. And the beginning is with Ron Wolf. And of course, Ron Wolf was a mentor to Ted Thompson, who was a mentor to Brian Gutekunst. And The Packer Way, which is a book that Ron Wolf wrote on how to run an organization and how to run basically a football team, that overarching philosophy and ideals and, you know, basically core tenets of how the Packers want to be run has been handed down, again, from Ron Wolf to Ted Thompson, to Brian Gutekunst. Are things exactly the same under Brian Gutekunst that they were under Ron Wolf? No. Every one of those GMs had their own unique way of doing things. As we saw these past couple weeks in free agency, Goody is not like Ted. Goody has some differences in how he operates. Ted was not like Ron Wolf. Ron Wolf was very aggressive in free agency. Ted didn't want to use it quite as much. But even though there have been differences and there's nuances to each GM, we have to sort of start with Ron Wolf to get a better understanding of this. Now, in order to do so, I need to read you a little bit from The Packer Way, which was, again, written by Ron Wolf. And I know that this probably doesn't make for the best overall video podcast if you're listening or watching on YouTube, but it's super important to the entire crux of our conversation today. So I will do my best to do a dramatic reading of Ron Wolf's The Packer's Way. Not the whole thing, that would take a really long time and would not really serve any purpose and would probably get me sued. But I do want to take a couple excerpts out of this that I think are super important. So here's Ron Wolf on sort of his philosophy of how the Packers went about acquiring players and studying players and getting players that they wanted out of the NFL draft and just kind of in general. Quote, I soon started to envision the type of player that could turn things around. For example, we'd be seeking big cornerbacks, physical guys who could handle the strong receivers in our division. To be successful, these corners would also need sufficient quickness and speed to hold up consistently on our level. Our wide receivers, likewise, would be big, just like in the 49er system. We are talking 5'11 and a half and up. Ideally, we would like them to be at least 6'1". Our tight ends need to be large. Same with our offensive linemen. Knowing the requirements narrows your player search. Keep that in mind. You may see a Darryl Green-type cornerback in the draft, but because he's small, we'd shy away from him. I realize he's played in the NFL for years at a high standard, but he is an exception, not the rule, and I like to stay with what'll work the highest percentage of the time. Also keep that in mind. A top-rate manager knows the exact traits he wants in the people who will make his system function. He knows what kind of personality he needs in certain spots. He knows the educational background he desires. He knows the experience level he requires. And he makes sure everyone who hires personnel also understands all of these requirements. By being so specific about requirements, you expedite the job search. If a candidate falls outside the priorities, don't interview them. It's critical that the company doesn't back off from these requirements when filling positions. If that happens, you risk reducing your organization's efficiency. Still, we continue to remind ourselves not to neglect the human element in our evaluations. I'm a stickler for knowing everyone's height, weight, and speed, what we call measurables, and I use those to limit the people we consider. In theory, the Raiders' Napoleon Kaufman, who was a running back, because he's shorter than we want our running backs, wouldn't be a high-round pick on our board, even though most teams would place him in the upper rounds. You have to adhere to your standards. At the same time, we always have to ask, can the person play? He may be a wonderful physical specimen, but that doesn't tell you one thing about his heart or his instincts or his aggressiveness. Kaufman was tough and productive. He was a player. So Kaufman would become an exception and would appear on our board. Accordingly, when you see an exception to the standards you have set, you must examine him thoroughly. Running back Warrick Dunn of Tampa Bay, who wound up being the 1997 Rookie of the Year, was an exception in the 1997 draft. If possible, we would have selected him. That's because he could flat out play, and that was enough for us. You'd be hurting your organization if you weren't flexible enough to give special exceptions a fair hearing, even if you have doubts about them. Yet, we still don't wander much from the philosophy that former Cowboys coach Tom Landry once described to his scouts in Dallas. This is how far this stuff goes back, guys. Back to Tom Landry in Dallas. He told them he didn't want Joe Washington, a talented but smallish running back, on his board because he was too short and not fast enough. His reasoning was that you make one exception and pretty soon you have a team of exceptions. I constantly remind our guys of that. I'd rather look bad and pass up an exception who makes it somewhere else than have a team of players who don't meet the standards that we've convinced lead to winning. We want a squad, for example, full of big, fast backs. Josh Jacobs, anyone? Over the long haul, you are more effective with these runners. I'd also prefer to miss on a linebacker such as Sam Mills, who had a wonderful career but was too small for us, rather than wander from our commitment to large, quick, mobile linebackers. I'd rather let someone else be the genius by uncovering the sleepers. I'm not in this to take what I call shots. Those selections where you project a future for a player that probably is far beyond his actual capabilities. For every reach you might get right, you'll miss on far too many to make the gamble practical. Once you start ignoring your base concepts, you risk undercutting the potential of your operation. You must have the discipline to stay with what's right, not with what's attractive. There's a whole book of everything that Ron Wolf talks about, but those I think are the extremely important excerpts on what we're going to talk about today. And what Ron Wolf is going over here is his overarching philosophy for putting together what he wants out of his players. And we can tell just by reading that, if that didn't ring a million bells, like the fast and agile and linebacker stuff, like that's Quay Walker in a nutshell, the Josh Jacobs part, like, this is exactly what Green Bay has done for years on years on years on years. These are the type of players that they require and want to acquire. And they set up athletic thresholds to narrow their search down, because what they are trying to do, and he basically almost like calls it out right here, is you'll miss on far too many to make the gamble practical. When he uses the word gamble here, what Green Bay is trying to do is basically become the casino. And what I mean by that is the house always wins. You might miss sometimes. The casino is going to lose sometimes. But if they set up the rules in their favor over the long haul, they're going to win far more often than not at a level that is probably going to be more consistent and on a level that most other NFL teams are not operating at, by just finding good players because they're consistently looking for players that are going to hit that threshold. And players that hit that threshold, that hit their requirements, are far more often to succeed. We'll look at that in great detail as we go through this today. But it starts with Green Bay's athletic thresholds. And how that works is Green Bay has very specific athletic thresholds that they want their players to meet. That might be a height and a weight. It might be agility testing. It might be certain strength requirements. It could be a 40 time, or more likely now, GPS tracking times. All of that goes into the secret sauce in the equation. And as much as we're going to go over today what Green Bay is looking for and what their philosophy is, unfortunately, none of us are actually in Green Bay's scouting department. We're not in the war room. We don't know exactly what those thresholds are. We have a pretty good idea based on the history of their drafting under Ted, under Brian, and under Ron Wolf of what type of players that they like. And this is not a plug that I'm required to do, but the Green Bay draft guide that Ross Uglum and the Packer Report and Jacob Morley and those guys put out does a phenomenal job of listing those trends that Green Bay goes after. We're going to go over some of them later. I don't want to give away the whole secret sauce either. I highly recommend you checking out their draft guide to get the full picture. And mine are based on their 2023 numbers, which are now going to be updated for, on their 2023 guide, which was 2022 and before. Their 2024 guide will be 2023 and before, but you get the point. They do a tremendous job of tracking all of that and also labeling the players in the draft that are most likely going to hit those thresholds. But we're going to go through a lot of that today, and we're going to compare it to RAS and relative athletic scores. But later on in this episode, I also want to make a very key distinction that's going to be very important there as well. The big thing here is, why have a draft philosophy? Why does Green Bay go about it in this very specific way? We always hear best player available on the draft board. That sounds great. However, if you don't have a system of putting together those players in order on your board, if you don't have a way of eliminating players, if you don't have a way towards putting the best prospects at the top of the board, best player available can actually be your enemy. And what I mean by that is, a lot of personal biases can play a portion of your evaluations of players. A lot of past players that you've evaluated that have gone on to be successful can either help or sometimes hinder your evaluations of current players. And there's just a lot of nuance that can go into that. If you just try with no system whatsoever to identify with the naked eye and have no rhyme or reason for picking a certain player at a certain spot, maybe it's need, maybe you're just going straight off a need, maybe you're just, again, doing the eye test. Well, I put these two players on tape and this one looks better, so I'm going with that one. That's great, but they may have really bad athletic testing and it may not work out very well for you. But if all you're going on is like, hey, I think this guy's the best, and you don't have anything to really back it up other than some scouting notes and things like that, that probably isn't good enough. Now, there can be a variety of different ways that you can go about putting a draft together. We have seen teams, the Raiders have done this in the past. Well, certainly the Raiders we have seen go on like insane speed runs under Al Davis. They just wanted like the fastest guys in the world. Not the perfect system, but it's a system. We have seen the Raiders under Mike Mayock really focus on high-level winning programs. They know that what they wanted to do was focus on building a winning culture. So they went to the Georgias and the Alabamas and a bunch of players from these high-end schools that had winning cultures so that they could infuse that winning into their culture. We've seen teams do that in the past. We've seen teams probably like a little bit more of like that Dan Campbell, who are looking for those ankle biters. It might not be a height, weight, speed. It might be like, hey, we're just looking for high football character and the guys that are going to get nasty and do all that sort of stuff. That can work. You can go about it in a variety of different ways. You might go into a draft saying, hey, what we need in this draft is more physicality. It's not height, weight, speed. It's not athletic testing. It's not this, that, or the other. We just need more intensity, more physicality. That might be what you go into the draft looking for. There could be teams that are more of a plodding running offense, and they might say, hey, we got to get faster, more playmakers on offense. You can go into it with a variety of ways of thinking, but the best way to go about it is having some sort of overarching philosophy that you want to go into the draft with. And for Green Bay, their draft philosophy is high-end athletes. And we're going to go into why that makes a ton of sense and why that gives them a leg up. And to be very, very clear, they are not the only team that is looking like height, weight, speed. We have heard that for decades in the NFL, but it is taken to a higher level, and Green Bay shrinks their player pool seemingly more than other teams. But there is a reason for that, and there is a good reason for that. The other thing we should probably note here is, again, these philosophies have evolved over time. Ron Wolf had set the foundation in Green Bay, and already you can tell what they were looking for at some of these positions has been carried over for over three decades now. And some of those philosophies are the same, but it does feel like Goody under his regime has gone even to a higher extent of these really, really high-end athletes and looking for players who have everything, the height, the weight, the speed, the agility, just all of it. They're looking for like complete athletes at all of their positions. And again, we'll get to in a moment why that could be very, very important. As far as Green Bay's philosophy overall, what they're looking for with those high-end super athletes is what's going to give you the best hit percentage in the draft. And again, it goes back to Ron Wolf saying like, hey, you might hit on some guys that are outside of those parameters, but more likely than not, if you keep drafting players outside of those parameters, you are going to hit at a far less rate than if you stick within your parameters. It doesn't mean you shouldn't always like just look within those parameters. It doesn't mean that you can't make an exception here or there. He said that very clearly, but your best bet at being efficient is by sticking within those parameters. By the way, when Green Bay's gone very aggressively outside of those parameters, it has not worked out very well. We'll talk about that as well. But what Green Bay wants to do, and this is very different, by the way, you might notice that Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney, if you're looking at their relative athletic scores, which again, we'll get to in just a moment. If you're looking at those, they're not super high. They're not bad, but they're more in like the five-ish range. And you might say, well, like that doesn't really fit their philosophy for acquiring players. There is a difference here that's very noteworthy. When you are acquiring players via the draft, you are putting a systematic, formulaic process in place to give you the best possible hit percentage to acquire players that are going to be successful in the NFL. You don't know, regardless of how good a player looks in college, it's a lot harder to project what they are going to look like at the NFL level. And we've seen players from all different backgrounds, all different schools, all different height, weight, speeds, sizes, everything succeed. There's no perfect formula, no matter what. So you're trying the best you can to bring that group down and have the best hit rate possible. But when it comes to free agency with Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney specifically, you're not as much concerned about utilizing that same process. The reason being is you're no longer projecting. You don't need to project if a player is going to be good in the NFL anymore. You know Josh Jacobs is good. You know Xavier McKinney's good. So why are you putting them through these thresholds anymore? You can specifically go and watch their tape in the NFL against other NFL teams and know that they are awesome. You don't need to project anymore. So it does get a little bit different. And Goot does seem to very much follow that philosophy as well, where when he's acquiring players via free agency, he doesn't quite care as much if they're these super athletes because he knows they're good at football. He's no longer trying to project. He can just go and sign them and know that they're going to come over and hopefully continue to be good at football. So there is a little bit of a difference there. It's finally here. March Madness, one of the most exciting sports weeks of the year, and it's about to be made even better by combining it with the excitement of Prize Picks. Testing my skills on Prize Picks over the past year has been my favorite way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few quick taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and the best part is that you can make your entries in under 60 seconds. Prize Picks has quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types, and that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. March Madness is always fun, a ton of epic moments, buzzer beaters, and unparalleled drama. But this year, it's going to be even more epic than ever while using Prize Picks to bring that excitement to an entirely new level. This past week, I used Prize Picks to make selections on Victor Wembanyama, Lionel Messi, Connor Bedard, and the Badgers' Tyler Wall. There are so many options to choose from that you'll never run out of new ways to use Prize Picks. And the absolute best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. Just download the app and use code PACKADAY and receive a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Eating healthy can be a challenge. If you're anything like me, I'm trying to make 2024 my best year ever. Trying to eat right, maintain a high level of energy, and make the right choices for my own personal health. But as much as I want to make the right choices, running to the butcher or the high-end grocery stores every single day to get a fresh quality cut of meat just isn't feasible. Thankfully, that's where Good Chop comes in, and it has completely changed my life. I'm so thankful that I found Good Chop because now I can get 100% grass-fed meat like ribeyes, filet mignon, organic chicken breasts, pork tenderloin, and so much more delivered directly to my door. Last night, cooked up organic chicken breasts, made my famous chicken curry. Yes, that is a true story. It is to die for. You would love to try it. And the chicken was incredible. Fresh, tender, unbelievable flavor. The best part was that I didn't even have to go to the store to get it. And Good Chop's price per meal starts at just $3.74, and their boxes are fully customizable with delivery to your door on your schedule. So go to goodchop.com/packaday120 and use code packaday120 to get $120 off across your first four boxes. That's code packaday120 at goodchop.com/packaday120 for $120 off. goodchop.com/packaday120 using code packaday120. What are you waiting for? But Green Bay overall is trying to get, again, the highest percentage of hits in the draft. And you have to remember this too. Green Bay is going about it knowing that they have, like this season, 11 selections in the draft. And they're going to follow that philosophy for the most part on all 11 picks. Now, on day three of the draft, they do get a little bit more flexible with those parameters, it does feel like, and just based on their draft history, especially under Goody. But for the most part, they are utilizing the same system throughout the draft. And if you think for 1 second, when they have 11 draft picks, if you think they're trying to hit on three or four guys, and if you think for 1 second they care if their hits come in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh round, they do not care. They're just trying to find three or four really good players in every draft that they can continue to build around and be a core member of their team. Every team is going to have seven, eight misses, six misses, whatever they have, depending on how many picks they have, but they're going to have more misses than they have hits. And I see sometimes, I've actually seen it in the comments this week when I was starting to post some of these relative athletic scores and what Green Bay's done. And I've been posting like Green Bay's hit rate and stuff. And people are posting, yeah, well, you know, Brian Gutekunst has more misses than he has hits. Every GM has more misses than they have hits. And this is why it's important to have a draft philosophy. Because I've said it, you've probably heard, some of you have probably heard me say this before. If you want to be the single best draft analyst for the 2024 NFL draft, put a draft guide together and in your final write-up, say that every single player is going to be a bust. You will have a higher percentage of hits than any other draft analyst out there because you will be right far more often than not. You will get a huge percentage of players right because most players do not go on to have successful NFL careers, and a very small percentage go on to have Pro Bowl or All-Pro caliber careers. So just say everyone's going to not turn out or be good, and you will get the vast majority of them right. Most GMs in most drafts are going to have far more misses than they have hits. And you can play that out for every GM through the history of time, and that is going to play out over and over and over and over. But like I said, Green Bay has 11 selections. They're going to use the same process for the most part through all 11 of those selections. And their goal is to just hit on three or four players, with one, maybe two of those players being high-end players that they can develop their team around moving forward. And if they've done so, it doesn't matter if it's the seventh round guy. It doesn't, like, go back to the running backs, right? The when in, what is it, 2017, when they drafted Jones, Devontae Mays, and Jamal Williams, a fourth, a seventh, and a fifth rounder. Do you think they care that it was the fifth rounder that turned out to be the best? They don't care. They couldn't care for 1 second it was the fifth rounder. And if it was Devontae Mays that turned out the best, they wouldn't have cared either. It just so happened it was the fifth rounder. And Green Bay this past year, we don't know what LVN is going to turn out with, you know, as yet. We have high hopes and we hope he continues to progress. But if they get Jaden Reed, Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, you know, Carl Brooks, Carrington Valentine, we can go on and on, you know, of the players that they found in this draft. If they get a bunch of those guys, they don't really care if you know, LVN doesn't turn out, if the other ones all do. Like, again, they're not so much concerned of that. And that's why you have a philosophy that guides you through the entirety of the draft. And that's why Goody wants more bites of the apple so that he has more players that he can put through this, basically this algorithm, and hope that it's going to, you know, punch out as many really good players as it can possibly produce. So that begs the question, and this is where there's a very important nuance here with how Green Bay does things. So why not just moneyball the thing? Why are you hiring Brian Gutekunst and a bunch of former NFL scouts to lead your process? And remember, Brian Gutekunst is not moneyball. Brian Gutekunst is not Harvard, Yale, mathematician, whatever you want to do. He is a longtime NFL scout. And if you're just going to go with an algorithmic approach, why not just go and find some, you know, person from Yale or Harvard or the best mathematical school and some math wizard and algorithm wizard, and they can just punch it in and say, here's who you should draft. Why not just do it that way? The reason being is that they are basically getting the best of both worlds in this scenario. And what I mean by that is by utilizing their parameters and by going through the system and going for super athletes, which are going to have a much higher hit rate overall, they're going to limit their pool far, you know, to a certain amount of players. But there's still going to be a ridiculous amount of players in that pool. And then within that pool, now Green Bay is going to put it through their rigorous scouting process where they are looking at background checks to see if this player is made of the right mindset, that they're going to want to continue to get better. And they're going to go through their long-term scouting process to see within that group, which of those players have actually the best possibility of becoming really great players long-term. So this is where you're getting the best of both worlds. You're getting the algorithmic approach of saying, hey, if this, then this, if you keep, you know, continue to select these high-end athletes over and over and over and over, you're going to get really great results. But there's a lot of high-end athletes, so we need to limit it down in some way. So let's utilize the scouting process that's worked for years and years and years to analyze those players and select the best ones that are going to have the best opportunity to become really good players moving forward. As I mentioned, this is not a perfect process. Nobody's going to get it right every single time, but it is a process that has shown to work far more often than not over the course of the past three decades. And Green Bay, I think, is continuing to tweak it and get better at it and hopefully can put another really great draft together in this upcoming draft. So that's sort of their general process. But why look at these super athletes? And then why, like, where does RAS come into this? We see every year that Green Bay has some of the highest relative athletic scores of any draft or anything like that. So where does this come into play? I think the first thing we need to do here is define relative athletic score. So relative athletic score is a metric that combines the various categories measured at the NFL Combine, height or at pro days, by the way, height, weight, wingspan, drill exercises, all of it into one aggregate number. That's where you get like a 9.84 RAS. That's the contextualized, that is then contextualized against other athletes at the same position. So for instance, if Quay Walker, who has a 9.65 RAS, what that basically means is that he is at a 96.5 percentile of an athlete of all the linebackers who have tested that they have testing numbers on in the history of having testing numbers from the combine, going back all the way to 1987, although he has more numbers from 2000 on, but still, he's in the 98.7 percentile of athletes at his position. Quay Walker, 96.5th percentile of linebackers at his position, you know, since they started gathering numbers. So that's basically what it is. And that is including all of the numbers that they can possibly have access to. And where I want to make this key distinction on in what I meant from what I mentioned earlier, I don't think Green Bay has any care about what RAS is in any way, shape, or form. It's probably reached the point, and it's such a popular metric within, you know, like NFL fan circles and like draft talk and everything like that, where they've probably seen what it is and they probably know what it is, but I'd be willing to bet you a lot of money that they have their own system, their own set of numbers, and their own algorithm that gives their own number. So I don't think Green Bay uses relative athletic scores. I would be pretty shocked if they did. They might compare and contrast maybe, but I don't think that's their number that they're actually using. I think they have a different formula. So it is important though, because what RAS has done for Packer fans is it's basically given a cheat sheet to what, you know, players Green Bay likes, because Green Bay consistently takes players with extremely high-end relative athletic scores, like all the time. And we'll go through this in very great detail, but that's why it's so important to know what RAS is in relative. And you can go to RAS.football to see all the scores for past Packers, current Packers, as well as everyone that's in this upcoming draft that's done testing already. And yet it'll spit out the score for you in this beautiful looking card. Kent Lee Platy does such a phenomenal job with it. But overall, if you look at which players Green Bay drafts, it's just high RAS score after high RAS score after high RAS score. Like I said, I don't think they use it, But I think their formula that they use matches up insanely well with this RAS formula, and you end up basically getting a cheat sheet into what Green Bay really, really likes. And how do we know that? Well, let's look at their current roster. Now, I didn't put in every single player because putting every single player that are like back of the roster players that are really don't have an even chance of making the team or anything like that, that doesn't tell us much. I narrowed it down to 45 players that have either made a 53-man roster or have a really good chance of making a 53-man roster this upcoming season that are on Green Bay's current roster. 45 players. Of those 45, five of those players do not have relative athletic scores. Romeo Doubs, Josh Myers, Rashid Walker, Christian Welch, and Emmanuel Wilson. Those five players do not have relative athletic scores. So we have 40 players that have either made the 53 or are likely to make the 53 that we have relative athletic scores for. Here are the numbers for Green Bay. Of those 40, 19 out of 40, almost half of them have a relative athletic score of 9.0 or better, meaning they are 90th percentile athletes at their given position. 19 out of 40. 25 out of 40 have a 8.0 or better relative athletic score. 29 out of 40 have a 7 or better. 35 out of 40 have a 6 or better. And 38 out of 40 have a 5 or better relative athletic score. And if you look at sort of the bottom of this roster, there's only three players on the roster of 40 players that have testing that could or, you know, have made a 53-man roster for Green Bay. Only three players that have an RAS score under 5.0. Those three players, Luke Tenuta with a 4.71, who was a waiver claim, sixth round pick that who knows if he's actually going to make the team or not. They've kept him around for a couple seasons. He'll have a chance, but he's at a 4.71. Benny Sapp III, who has a 4.36, who was an undrafted free agent last year, who is a special teams guy and will have a chance to make the roster, but it's certainly no guarantee. And Caleb Jones, who's a mammoth human being, which means his testing is inherently going to be really bad, but he's a back of the roster 53-man player. And guess what? Undrafted free agent. Those are the only three players of 40 players who have testing scores that have either made the 53 or could make a 53 that have an RAS score under 5. Meanwhile, here are your Packers that have a 9 or better relative athletic score. And these are in order from highest to lowest. Christian Watson, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, Luke Musgrave, Quay Walker, Tucker Kraft, Devontae Wyatt, Zach Tom, Jair Alexander, Eric Stokes, Lucas Van Ness, Corey Ballantyne, Elton Jenkins, Carrington Valentine, Colby Wooden, Bo Melton, AJ Dillon, Dontavian Wicks, and Sean Clifford. All have a relative athletic score of 9 or better. Add in Royce Newman, Jordan Love, Ben Sims, Zane Anderson, Anthony Johnson Jr., and Sean Ryan, all with scores of 8 or better. Kenny Clark, TJ Slayton, Tyler Davis, Isaiah McDuffie, all with 7 or better. And then it kind of goes on from there. And that is where they are at. Like I said, you have, 35 out of 40 with a 6 or better and 38 out of 40 with a 5 or better. And again, the only three under 5 are Luke Tenuta, Benny Sapp, or Caleb Jones that we have testing scores for. All right, but here's the other thing. Those are the overall players that are on the roster right now. We're not looking, as I mentioned before, out of like acquiring players via waivers or undrafted free agency or free agency or things like that. We're looking at how they go about drafting players. And when you look at how Brian Gutekunst specifically has gone about drafting players, he has gone about it in a very systematic way. Here are his first round picks. Every single first round pick has a relative athletic score of 8.41 or better. LVN, 9.37. Quay Walker, 9.65. Devontae Wyatt, 9.63. Eric Stokes, 9.39. Jordan Love, 8.54. Rashawn Gary, 9.94. Savage, 8.41. And Jair Alexander, 9.47. So super high-end athletic scores. Everyone was an 84th percentile athlete or better. And only Jordan Love and Darnell Savage did not have a 9.0 or better relative athletic score. In the second round, Josh Myers, we do not have a relative athletic score for because he didn't do all the testing. Luke Musgrave, 9.77. Christian Watson, 9.96. AJ Dillon, 9.17. Elton Jenkins, 9.28. Josh Jackson, 9.23. The only outlier here, Jaden Reed, 6.68. Still a good athlete, but didn't have quite that high testing. They went maybe a little bit outside their usual. Sometimes, as Ron Wolf said, you got to make an exception. That was one, and it wasn't like a high-end exception. He easily falls within their parameters, but they usually like going a little higher. They didn't, and it paid off huge dividends there. their third round picks. Tucker Kraft, 9.64, Sean Ryan, 8.03, Josiah DeGuara, 8.67, and Oren Burks, 9.77. They have two other players that they really went outside of their parameters with. Amari Rodgers, 5.56, Jay Sternberger, 5.24. Two of their biggest busts in the first three rounds are two players that had the lowest relative athletic scores of any of their other picks in the first three rounds. Amari Rodgers with a 5.56 and Jay Sternberger with a 5.24. Both huge busts. Fourth round picks. Romeo Doubs does not have a relative athletic score. Colby Wooden, 9.27. Zach Tom, 9.53. Royce Newman, 8.74. Jamon Moore, 8.47. All 84th percentile athletes are better. Fifth round. Sean Clifford, 9.02. Dontavian Wicks, 9.13. Kingsley Keke, 8.01. J.K. Scott, even the punter, 8.51. MVS, 9.33. Now, this is where they start going a little bit outside of their parameters. Day three, you know, fifth round or later, they're going to start being a little bit more flexible. Probably some of these high-end athletes are not around anymore, and they're just going to go and try to find good football players. Now, they get a Kingsley Nagbare in the fifth round with a 6.24. TJ Slayton was right outside with a 7.96. Shamar Jean-Charles, 4.56. Cole Madison, 4.42. In the sixth, Carl Brooks, 5.81, so again, a little bit lower. Anders Carlson, no relative athletic score. Cole Van Lanen, 8.34. McDuffie, 7.53. Runyon, 9.36. Jake Hansen, only a 3.73. Stepaniak did not have a score. Kadar Hallman, 9.2. Equanimeous St. Brown, 9.82. And Dexter Williams, 8.25. Even in the seventh round, they're finding a lot of really high-end athletes. Carrington Valentine, 9.28. Anthony Johnson Jr., 8.07. Grant Dubose was over 8. Carpenter is over 8. Jonathan Garvin over 8. Summers over 9. Looney over 9. Hunter Bradley, 8.93. Kendall Donerson over 9. They have Kylan Hill with a 7 or more. Samori Toure, 6 or more. The only 7th round pick that was under 5 that had a score was with Jonathan Ford, the big defensive tackle. If you put that all together, all of Goody's draft picks, he's had 53 draft picks that have had relative athletic scores. All right, 53. 25 of the 53, 47%, almost 50%, have had a relative athletic score of 9.0 or better. 25 out of 53, 47.1%. That is an extremely high number. 40 out of 53 have had a relative athletic score of 8 or better, 75%. 3 out of every 4 of Brian Gutekunst's draft picks have had a relative athletic score of 8 or more. 43 out of 53 have had 7 or better at 81%. 46 out of 53 have had 6 or better relative athletic score, 86.8%. And then 5 or better has been 49 out of 53, a 92.4%. 92.45% of every single one of Brian Gutekunst's draft picks have had a relative athletic score of 5 or better. Only 4 of 53, 7.5%, have been below a 5.0 relative athletic score, below a 50th percentile athlete at their position. And by the way, it's worth noting, Goody's 6 worst athletic score, relative athletic scores of all time that he has drafted: Amari Rodgers, bust; Jay Sternberger, bust; Shamar Jean-Charles, bust; Cole Madison, we don't know what was going to happen there with all the off-field stuff, but let's just say it did not work out. Jake Hansen, bust; Jonathan Ford, TBD, still on the roster, practice squad guy, but probably not trending in the right direction. Those were his 6 lowest relative athletic scores that he actually drafted in the draft. All of them did not work out. So when Goody has gone about doing it his way, he's stuck to his formula. And like I said, 92.4% are going to at least have a 5 relative athletic score or better, and 86% a 6 or higher, and it just goes like from there. You can pretty much narrow it down. If they have an under 5.0 RAS, basically just take them off the board. It is extremely unlikely that they are going to take them, and they have never taken anyone in that range under 5 until round 5 or later. They've never taken a relative athletic score under 5 until the 5th round or later. And the closest thing was Amari Rodgers with a 5.56 in the 3rd round and a Jay Sternberger with a 5.24 in the 3rd round, and both of those players were busts. Now, it's one thing that Green Bay has this philosophy. That's great. But how does that work for the rest of the league? Well, let's look at the All-Pros from last year. First and second team All-Pros. These numbers are very eerily similar to what Green Bay has had from a success rate, or like how they've gone about drafting their players, I should say. 46 players on the All-Pro team last year that have relative athletic scores. 25 out of 46 were a 9 or higher. 54% of the All-Pros, first and second team, had a relative athletic score of 9 or higher. 76% had an 8 or higher. 87% had a 7 or higher. And all but one had at least a 5.0 or better. Only one All-Pro made it that was under a 5.0 RAS. And that was Kyren Williams, the running back for the Rams, who was the second team All-Pro behind Christian McCaffrey in a year for running backs that was probably a little non-standard. The only ones that had below a 7 RAS, Patrick Ricard, the fullback, Puka Nacua, phenomenal wide receiver, Kyren Williams, we talked about. Those were the only three on offense. Teron Johnson, the slot corner, was a second team All-Pro as a slot for Buffalo. Quincy Williams was the third first team All-Pro linebacker. He was ranked third on that list. And then Tre'Varius Ward, the corner for San Francisco, as a second team All-Pro. Those were the only six that had under a 7.0 relative athletic score that made the All-Pro last year. So again, Green Bay, I don't believe, uses the relative athletic score, but you can see this is just a general number that relative athletic score gives to give you the idea of their overall athleticism. These high-end athletes have a much better probability of becoming Pro Bowl and All-Pro caliber players, and it gives you the best opportunity to find good and great players. If you go outside of that, your probability just goes way down. It doesn't mean that you can't find a Puka Nacua, but if you draft a bunch of Puka Nacuas, the odds are you're going to have a lot of busts and one Puka Nacua. And the odds are if you grab a lot of great athletes, you're going to get some really good players with also some busts. That's just the way that this works. But Green Bay has a very systematic and formulaic approach. Here's the big thing. RAS is not perfect. You can grab a Kendall Donerson, a 9.92 relative athletic score. That doesn't mean he's going to be great. And he wasn't. He was a small school guy that had no idea how to play edge and was never going to probably develop, but he was a freak athlete. Doesn't mean anything. I guarantee you Kenneth Odemegwu, who is an amazing rugby player, he probably would have a great RAS. Doesn't mean he's going to be able to come in and tear it up in the NFL. Jaden Reed, 6.68 RAS. Puka Nacua, we just talked about, 5-something RAS. It's not the highest athletes in the world. Devontae Adams wasn't the like super high-end athlete. They're phenomenal wide receivers. Kyren Williams was under a 5. Like, you can find good players. There's no perfect system. But what they are trying to do is play the casino style, play the odds, give themselves as many rolls as possible with the best hit rate that you can possibly imagine by going over high-end athletes and then narrowing down those high-end athletes using the old school scouting process to find the best possible players that are going to be Green Bay Packers. And as of late, it's worked out pretty great for Brian Gutekunst and company, and they've really turned around this team in a very short period of time and built something that has the potential to be very special in the upcoming seasons if they can, you know, continue to have the hit rate that they've had. With 11 picks coming up in this draft, it could get even better, and I guarantee you they're probably not going to change their philosophy at this point in time, especially knowing the draft that they just had a season ago. So how should you prepare for the draft? Well, look at high RAS players. If they're under 5, basically just take them off your board. You probably don't even have to watch them. Just watch players with 5 or more RAS, and if they take someone outside of it, be pleasantly surprised, or maybe don't be, because Goody has not had good success with those players. But let's just be real. He doesn't take a bunch, and he hasn't taken anyone in the first 4 rounds that's had an under 5 RAS. And the last thing I'll say is, go out and get that Green Bay draft guide, because they will tell you the exact parameters, because there are other ones too. It's not just relative athletic score. And I'll give you some of them from the previous draft guide. These are not all of them. There are a lot more detail in the draft guide, but at wide receiver, it's usually at least 5'11", 195. Interior offensive lineman and offensive tackle, it's the short shuttle score that has been very consistent. Running backs, 205 pounds or more. Quarterback, 6'2", 220. Edge, 6'4", 260. Interior defensive line, 6'2", 295 at least. The linebacker looks at the broad jump. The corners, 4'6", at least have a 4'6", 40 or better. Safety, 5'11", 200 as size and weight. There are thresholds that you can look at their past draft picks and say, all right, this is at least their threshold for what they're looking for. And the Green Bay draft guide will have way more on that. And it will have more detail even from this past draft that I don't even have access to yet. Overall, Green Bay is taking a very systematic, philosophical, and formulaic approach, but they're combining the best of analytics with the best of scouting to get the best possible prospects. It's important to note one more time, it is not perfect. There is no perfect system, and sometimes you do need to go outside of the parameters. Jaden Reed is probably not somebody they normally would have taken with his athleticism in the second round, but he could play. Green Bay saw it, and I think that's probably a reason why Green Bay moved down a couple times, because he was a little bit of an outlier. So I think A, they thought he'd probably be there, but B, they probably didn't want to spend quite as high of a pick, but they were willing to move down two times, pick up two extra picks, which turned out to be Dontayvion Wicks and Carl Brooks, get a Jaden Reed and feel great about it. And they ended up getting three potentially really great players out of it. So like I said, players will miss outside of their range. People will miss inside their range. It's just a really smart approach to take that's going to give them the most efficient way to draft players over time. They can have some of those bad drafts that have not worked out very well. That's going to happen from time to time. The system's not always going to work. The scouts aren't always going to get it right. But if you do it over an extended period of time, over a 10-year period of time, we're probably going to see a lot more hits for Goody and company than we're going to see. Let me take that back. You're not going to see more hits than misses, but you're going to see more hits over league average than what other teams are doing throughout the course of the league, even though Green Bay a lot of times is not having premium draft selections because usually they're in the realm of winning and not getting super high draft picks. The goal is to get the highest amount of hits possible. Doesn't matter if it's in round one or round seven. Doesn't matter how they have to go about doing it. It's just to get the most hits possible, and this is their system for doing so. I hope I did this justice today. I hope you learned a lot from this episode. I hope it gives you more ammunition for how to prepare for this upcoming draft. I hope it gives you a better idea of relative athletic scores. Go check out Kent Lee Platy's site, ras.football. Make sure to get that Green Bay draft guide. That is going to do it for me. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Jay Bardad, Brandon Pauletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Bremen, and David Prendergast. I will see you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, Go Pack Go.